A New Republic of the Heart, An Ethos for Revolutionaries, by Terry Patton. Narrated by Terry Patton. Published by North Atlantic Books. Introduction. What's really happening? Our times are strange and wondrous. So strange and so wondrous that they far outstrip our comprehension. Even as we are verging on world-changing breakthroughs in science, technology, consciousness, cooperation, and leadership, we're also verging on catastrophic breakdowns of our planetary ecology, as well as our cultural cohesion, economic and social order, and, of course, our politics. It is wild, significant, inspiring, and terrifying that this is all happening simultaneously. We are clearly approaching a moment of truth. We need the guidance of higher wisdom. Fortunately, all of humanity's highest wisdom traditions are in conversation as never before. And yet the circumstances that have sometimes enabled wisdom to guide the human future seem to be eroding underneath our feet. Our collective nervous system is surging with adrenaline, jolted again and again by breaking news and visions of apocalypse, as well as technological utopias and dystopias. What's really happening? Where are we headed? Is human civilization really coming apart? Will we all come together as never before? What does that mean for us personally? What can we do? How can we be the change we want to see in the world? In 2016, while I was writing early drafts of this book, the average planet-wide surface air and ocean temperatures were the warmest ever recorded for 16 consecutive months, and extreme weather events continued to increase in size and frequency. At the same time, a backlash against liberal democracy, immigration, and globalization spawned a worldwide political crisis, and our planetary ecology and climate were, to put it mildly, not the dominant popular priorities. Although I feel chilled to the bone by some of what we might be facing, I am also uplifted and inspired to behold our most dramatically positive possibilities. It is becoming a cliche to say that we're in a race between consciousness and catastrophe. So my focus is not on laying odds. It is on the inner work that can enable us to do the outer work of navigating this time of transition in the best ways possible. Some colleagues and I have discovered some crucially helpful insights and practices. I believe they can lead us to a grounded, positive, authentic way of relating to our predicament and our opportunities. These insights and practices might help get us through the years ahead. More important, they might even help us take giant steps into a collective, transformational process that can actually change the human game in the ways many of us have sought to all our lives. Such a game-changing transformation would be something like what was in ancient times symbolized by a precious jewel. Buddhists have called it a wish-fulfilling gem. Such a diamond cannot be formed except under titanic pressures. Sudden, dramatic evolutionary progress often takes place under conditions of extreme tension, when pressures require rapid and dramatic adaptation. When new conditions disrupt ecological balance, other crucial environmental factors change, and they force new faculties and behaviors to emerge. We are seeing this happen to the planet, but the same thing is happening to us. As the planet is pushed to its limits, so are we. While the changes being triggered ecologically are threatening in many ways, their effects on us, even when they do harm, may well also produce the evolutionary pressures that will form something like a diamond, a qualitative, structural transformation of the elements of our very character. It will demand everything of us. That means we must accept responsibility for human evolution itself, and that this evolutionary transformation must take place not over eons, but rather as an accelerated, punctuated socio-cultural transformation. Evolution has shown its ability to find astonishing expressions under the right circumstances. It has always proceeded against overwhelming life and death odds. But right now, we are in the midst of a collection of interconnected challenges and opportunities of unprecedented scope and intensity. If evolution proceeds in fits and starts with long periods of relative equilibrium, punctuated by turbulent periods of rapid evolutionary innovation, those of us alive today are right in the center of the action. Boom or doom? Two compelling and mutually conflicting meta-narratives, each with conflicting views of our predicament, are in competition among intelligent observers. The first is optimistic. It is a narrative of continual survival, adaptation, transcendence, and progression. In this view, our technological and cultural advances are entering a period of game-changing, exponential acceleration. Our increasing collisions with planetary limits and the unfolding catastrophic consequences of our unsustainable behaviors, though very real, will finally sober us and force us to change our collective habits, and we will have new means to ease the transition. Circumstances will teach us wisdom and set us firmly back on a positive evolutionary path into a marvelous, unchartable future. An evolutionary version of this narrative sees our precarious global predicament as an important transition, but a temporary bottleneck in our upward evolutionary trajectory. It sees a powerful creative drive, native to every morsel of reality, driving our evolution. This dominant creative factor will be key to ensuring our continued survival and progress in ecology, science, culture, ethics, technology, politics, economics, and consciousness. In the version of this narrative that inspires me, humankind will eventually establish a meta-community, or meta-sangha, of communities of practice, expressing our highest ethics and values. And this future civilization will eventually manifest a new stage in the evolution of the human race, a new adulthood for the species, perhaps even a unified and transcendent superorganism that some see as the next Buddha or as the true meaning of the second coming of Christ. The second, equally influential meta-narrative is pessimistic and socio-ecological. It sees a more primitive and instinctual power as the dominant force driving both our development and our degeneration, and ultimately determining our fate. This darker side of that raw evolutionary energy, or eros, manifests as an unquenchable and compulsive drive for survival, dominance, adventure, acquisition, conquest, consumption, and control. We have long been in the grip of this power eros, and look at what has happened. We've nearly exhausted Earth's resources, enormously overshot its carrying capacity, and now are on the verge of an age of contraction, scarcity, environmental degradation, social upheaval, and economic collapse. And these dangers appear more likely with every passing year. In this narrative, humankind's unbridled drives will inexorably lead to the collapse of civilization and the planetary biosphere, resulting in mass species extinctions and, in time, scenarios that may well lead to a dystopian, nearly uninhabitable planet and perhaps the end of the human race. Many deep ecologists say we have already entered the early stages of the collapse of human civilization. My life and work have been fueled and inspired by the optimistic evolutionary meta-narrative. but I've been shaken, sobered, and educated by my intensive study of the science and journalism supporting the pessimistic meta-narrative, which more realistically accounts for the latest current data. The history and evolution of humankind, and even of each individual life, reveals a struggle between the forces and effects of the evolutionary creative eros and the instinctual power eros. And while we may place our hopes in the first narrative, we cannot dismiss the mounting evidence that supports the second. No one can know for sure which of these meta-narratives will shape our future. We are suspended between two antithetical possibilities, as well as a spectrum of possibilities between the two extremes. I believe that even though certainty is beyond our grasp, we are the prime actors in the drama. And even without any certainty, we can greatly influence the outcomes. I take this to heart, and I suggest we all do, because we're each partially in charge. The locus of control of human civilization, this vast and hyper-complex system, is distributed, non-linear, and unpredictable. It is no more conscious, no more able to choose its direction anywhere else than it is right now, right here. That implicates me and you, at least in some small but potentially significant way. If humanity is to wake up to its predicament and choose a sustainable future, millions of people will necessarily participate. And where might that awakening and participation begin? When? I can't expect it to be the exclusive responsibility of someone else, of some political or spiritual leader or expert or philanthropist or celebrity. It must also depend on me. If I am aware enough to sense and feel that I can make some small difference, and the same goes for you. That means that I must remain in conversation with the leading edges of the dark ecological narrative and with the leading edges of the humanistic technological narrative of progress. At the same time, I do well to stay close to the insight that even though I care deeply about the future of life, I can trust reality itself, however much death and loss it may contain, never to really be a problem. Regardless of its nature, the future is not a dilemma, and it doesn't need to be solved. And this does not change another truth. I want to pay attention when what I love is threatened. I am honor-bound to remember that I don't know what will happen, and that no one else knows either. Wisdom requires being epistemically humble enough, knowing that you don't know rather than epistemically closed or thinking you know, to learn what is revealed by a wide range of perspectives. The interaction between us and these perspectives and the scenarios they imply will create the future into which we will all live. I can hold the question much better if I don't close myself off to any part of what human intelligence sees. And so I become a multi-perspectival participant in the affair of our common life, fully aware that we must act decisively and effectively in the midst of great uncertainties. After all, we do know the dire consequences of not acting. What we can do. We know that both the worst and the best in human beings and our potential for rapid, radical change all emerge in times of crisis. This crisis will require very different tools than anything we've relied on in the past to dig ourselves out of holes and harrowing emergencies. This is a new kind of challenge. Technological and scientific breakthroughs will create openings for fundamental change. They will be a necessary part of the path forward, but they are not sufficient. The same is true of the wisdom born of high states of consciousness, and it is true of enlightened organizational practices. Leadership in any of the ways we have understood it until now will be crucial, but it too will not be enough. What will be required is whole system change, a broad transformation of all human civilization. That's enormous and unprecedented. So of course it will take a while. It implies constant transformation and aliveness, inner and outer. To take this seriously on a personal level is to confront an impossibly grand imperative. In effect, our predicament is calling on us to simultaneously volunteer for the supreme commando raid behind enemy lines and to join a metaphorical monastery and give up our lives to the wholeness that sustains us. And we are asked to renew these commitments again and again in every new moment. We are called to a robust and dynamic new form of spiritual activism, or activist spirituality, that fuses the inner work of personal transformation and awakening with the outer work of service, social entrepreneurship, and activism. Our relationships, our communities, our connectedness to others, our ability to be resourceful and resilient, these are likely to be our most meaningful security under the extreme circumstances that are increasingly likely. And our psychological and spiritual resilience will become our most essential capital. Our thriving may depend most of all on our courage and generosity, our ability to defy our fear, to be happy for no reason at all, to cooperate with others locally in our community, and to bounce back creatively after traumatic setbacks. These are the kinds of virtues and the kinds of bonds that will probably really matter. The balance could quite possibly tip toward survival and evolution. A large part of me, the greater part, still believes it will. But no one knows the future. In the process of writing this book, I have faced the futures I feared facing, and it took me through a disorienting months-long plunge into a dark night of the soul. I wouldn't have been true to myself if I had refused to consider the darker possibilities and their transformative gift of a different kind of hope and gravitas on the far side of despair. Even if global catastrophes and planetary extinction are our inescapable fate, how our souls respond, transform, and reveal their character are matters of utmost significance. And besides, every day is a gift. No matter what lies ahead, it is tremendously important that we participate in ways that express our highest character and values. We can choose to act on the basis of what is best in ourselves. We can try to engineer and serve a comparatively soft landing to our overheated, turbulent trajectory, a benign transition from gross unsustainability to a sustainable human presence on our planet. And we can care for one another, even under the worst-case scenarios. In any event, we can wake up together into responsibility instead of sleepwalking into apocalypse. Let's talk. In this pivotal moment of truth for our species, a whole wave of radical conversations is inevitable. For these conversations to really make a difference, we must break through our personas and our inauthentic poses. This is a deeper level of discourse than has hitherto seemed thinkable in public, disarming, tender, and authentic. To my knowledge, we have never had such public conversations. Any such conversation requires an extraordinary degree of intelligence, freedom, clarity, and intimacy. And perhaps it can only take place in a moment of supreme urgency, like this one. But now the stakes for humankind are our collective fate, a life and death choice. As Samuel Johnson noted, nothing clarifies a man's mind so much as the knowledge that he shall be hanged in the morning. We are in territory that can clarify our minds. perhaps the calm before the storm. This historical moment may be the last window when we can initiate such a conversation in an environment of relative tranquility. Such a conversation requires a level of trust, vulnerability, and truthfulness that our culture seems to preclude, and we tend to shy away from it. It isn't easy to examine and feel our deepest fears, or to acknowledge our unsustainable, addictive way of life. In a way, it is like a 12-step moment of clarity, out of which unexpected changes of habit and character become mysteriously possible through a power greater than ourselves. That power may be the pressure of evolution itself. Important conversations will refine practical solutions to our current social, political, economic, and environmental crises. Some among us have already been having those conversations for years, but they haven't yet produced the urgently needed outcomes. Those conversations will deepen, extend, and continue. A new soul-level conversation is called for. It can only occur in a very different state of consciousness. It also requires new, more spacious, and holistic, and dimensional, and nuanced structures of mind. It requires integral consciousness and the integrated intelligence of our whole being, what I call integral heart intelligence, which integrates mental intelligence and a powerful will with intuitive wisdom. These collective evolutionary capacities emerge when individuals consistently practice transformative inner disciplines, individually and with each other, with the united intention to serve a greater good. We are going to be drawn out of our comfort zones, but perhaps into something deeper and more real, meaningful, and rewarding. Periods of great adversity often produce exciting and satisfying lives. There is a kind of love possible during times of war or natural disasters, a kind of vivacity and authenticity. In this way, we might actually do something even better than surviving the coming crises and catastrophes that might await us. We might learn to thrive in a way that perhaps we were not before our runaway planetary emergency began to threaten every comfortable structure of existence. We might become something so far beyond what we are, who we have been, and how we have thought and lived and loved and spoken and treated one another and our planet, that we might, for all practical purposes, be a new species. This is a grand idea, and yet it is reasoned from evidence, and it is simple. It is the basis for the vision, motivation, and practices presented in this book. When we emerge from the isolating trance of our fragmented subcultures and begin to act with others with the understanding that we really are all in this together, something important happens. We enter together into a profound shared experience. We enter into a new consciousness and creativity that are not available to lone individuals. No one, regardless of their enlightenment, can be what many of us can be when we are awake together, united in consciousness, vision, fellowship, care, and purpose. Intimate, candid, catalytic soul conversations can open a doorway out of our collective trance, our conditioned alienation, our collective bad dream. It is a cluster of conversations that lead into an integral culture and consciousness, the next stage in our evolution. And in that consciousness, all our other necessary conversations about practical and political solutions to urgent problems can be fruitful in a way they have never been until now. Writing this book has been profoundly humbling. I don't imagine I stand on some superior moral or spiritual ground. I am a student of this process and these ideas, a teacher who teaches what he most needs to learn. I need this soul conversation as much as you do, and this book is my attempt to begin the conversation with you and with as many people as possible. This book represents my attempt to complete the enormous unfinished work of my generation. We may not be able to leave behind as healthy a planet as we were given, but I wish to bequeath to my son and all our daughters and sons a supremely valuable legacy. I hope this book can be a catalyst, one of many, to help us grow into the new version of humankind that is envisioned here.
My hope is that having read this far, you will choose to enter this conversation. For me, it's a first step in a process of building connections, conversations, relationships, and communities that both nourish and embody the higher potentials of our species, one that will provide a solid, integral foundation on which we may begin to build together in the clear, pure words of Charles Eisenstein, the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible.
A brief tour through the book. This book reflects my own process of coming to terms with our current planetary crisis in all its complexity and uncertainty, exploring the nature and implications of global citizenship, and clarifying a radical new understanding of practice and activism. It addresses not only the external crisis, but all the internal processes by which we understand, or fall short of understanding, what is truly going on, and by which we become the change we want to see in the world. Part 1 establishes the multidimensional context. It summarizes our cataclysmic ecological predicament, the wholeness underlying our interconnected, more than human world, and the evolutionary and integral visions that establish a basis for a more integrated consideration of how we live meaningful lives in a time of crisis. It synthesizes important insights and ideas that readers can also find in other contexts. Chapter 1 surveys our critical evolutionary predicament and crisis, including both its perils and promises, from the state of the Earth itself to the trickiness of understanding our situation clearly, including the wickedness of the problems themselves as well as how our own brains and psyches make it maddeningly hard to fully understand and effectively respond to them. Chapter 2 faces the sober facts and responds with activism, appreciating the gift of life and loving life. We allow our hearts to be pierced by the maddening situation we find ourselves in. We consider how we can ground ourselves in an unconditional happiness that doesn't depend on reasons to be happy. And finally, we consider the esoteric anatomy of activism, the absolutely complementary nature of inner and outer work. Chapter 3 considers reality's undivided wholeness, the most basic, obvious, and elusive truth about ourselves and our environment, and how our usual approaches, especially in civilized societies, is to bypass this perspective in favor of endless fragmentation and analysis, which contributes to the pathology by which we have wrought ecological havoc upon our whole planet. Chapter 4 views humans in the context of our sweeping evolutionary story and sees into this pivotal moment when we shift into a much accelerated evolutionary future. Chapter 5 introduces an integral way of understanding our multidimensional reality, appreciating how all human perspectives are partial views of a larger truth. Beyond the cognitive, emotional, and spiritual limitations of our typical fragmented thinking are more holistic perspectives that offer a basis for a radical integral ecology. My original thinking is largely concentrated in Part 2, which explores an integral understanding of the nature of individual and collective spiritual practice, purpose, social responsibility, and evolutionary activism. These explorations point the way toward an integrated practice that is both personal and social, and that enacts whole system change, a process that is profound, radical, and all-inclusive. I explore how we can begin right where we are, in our relationships with one another, and in our conversations, to seed a broad-based cultural transformation. Chapter 6 describes integral practice grounded in the awakening of free consciousness and love. It unpacks the holistic understanding of life, the humble, curious, joyous disposition, and the flexible, improvisational disciplines of a comprehensive, integrated spiritual practice, and how it becomes a creative relationship to life's unfolding that can inform every new moment. Chapter 7 explores the unique adventure of practice that unfolds for each individual soul, and how it can enable us to live our deepest purpose, which we can often best understand through old stories, archetypes, and metaphors. Chapter 8 shows how such holistic inner work expresses itself creatively in all kinds of outer work that creatively address the need for whole system change and the multidimensional nature of culture and society. Evolutionary activism can take a multitude of forms, including in the system political activism, protest against the system, and activism that obviates government, going around the system. We look at 4 specific examples and consider a broad range of integral approaches to political change. Chapter 9 looks at the powerful synergies activated by communities of practice as a source of hope for the future, and describes the tender, fierce, passionate nature of authentic communication, as well as the lessons learned through the integral community's experiment with We Space. Here we begin to speculate about how this new tribalism will shape our near future. Chapter 10 explores the nature and effectiveness of conversations and the structures and boundaries that attend to them. It considers what it takes to engage deep, generative, mutual exchanges and explores significant conversations about the human future that are taking place within 3 groups of leading-edge thinkers, but that need to be happening between the groups. Chapter 11 is about our unique role in this place and time for transforming civilization and planetary life. We are it, whether we like it or not, and it is up to us, through our inner and outer work, to enact all necessary changes for creating a living, sustainable, exciting future. This work expresses who we truly are, and it will go on forever, even after it's too late, which it never is.